veteran is someone who at one point in their life wrote a blank check made payable to the United States of America for an amount up to and including their life. Welcome to Common Valor, real stories from those who served in America's military, brought to you by Vetflix, a leader in documenting and sharing the veteran experience.
Perhaps through some trickery by his father, Dennis Martin ended up serving in the United States Coast Guard. Always a good swimmer, Dennis enjoyed life as a Coastie and his role in helping fight the war on drugs. He remains a proud American who gladly defended our freedom and would gladly do it again. But when he got out, he found himself adrift and unable to fit back into civilian society. He had work until the economy went south, and then slid down the slope to homelessness and basic survival. His story of living hand to mouth gives us all a chance to better understand the consequences of military service and the struggles that vets may face that sometimes end in homelessness and despair.
I actually wound up in the military was because of my father. After I had gone to 2 years of college for criminal law, it was a junior college, I finished and said, you know, I think I'm done with college. I want to do something different. And he said basically to me, where are you going to live now? And I said, at home? He goes, oh, no. And he said, here the military has plenty of room for you. And they have a great program, 30 days vacation, medical. They'll put you, give you a place to stay, but you ain't staying at the house no more. And I was an age at, you know, of partying and drinking, and you know, and he pretty much had probably enough of that, and like any 20-year-old kid at the time. And it was a saving grace. I think within a few weeks after he had said that, I got a call from the Coast Guard recruiter and said that you're leaving for boot camp. And I don't remember much about talking to the recruiter, because I was during my party and drinking days. And I think my father took the test, and I think he signed the papers. So that's just kind of how it went. And I got shipped off to Cape May, New Jersey. Well, it was always in my back of my mind to be in the military. It was kind of a natural choice for me to go into the Coast Guard, because I grew up on Cape Cod, and I was on the water all the time. I was on a lake, or I was on the ocean. I was swimming in the ocean. I ended up in boot camp. That long hair that I had became very short very quickly. When you have, at the time when they first start you out, we had a big company. We had about, we started out with 160 guys, and only 109 of us graduated. A lot of people got hurt, couldn't swim, because part of it, you had to swim. 16 weeks at that time. Boot camp was very long, because it was a lot of schooling at night. You drill all day, you wear sea bags, you go swimming in the ocean, you swim in a pool. They would tell you to hold a brick for 10 minutes and tread water to see if you could keep weight on you. And a lot of training and how to use your pants into a life preserver and things like that. But I was also a very good swimmer anyways before I got there. So it was kind of like fish in the water for me. I was just, you know, it was natural to me to swim, especially in a pool. A pool was nothing comparing to being in the ocean. The Coast Guard had real leniency on anything they went on a ship, because they come under maritime law. The Coast Guard could board any ship anywhere in the world within 12 feet of a dock. It was considered an international law. So the Coast Guard, because we were Department of Transportation, could fly the American flag anywhere in the international waters. So they could board any ship without warrants. I mean, do anything you want. They find stuff, they're going to grab you. And a lot of that was enforced down towards the Keys. It's because the biggest influx at that time was drugs coming through the Keys out of Cuba and out of Central America and things like that. My first search and rescue was in a Northeaster. We were going out to get a boat that had hit these rocks. They were called Mohegan Rocks out near Mohegan Island. And can't see them in a Northeaster. And probably the waves that we were in with that 44-foot were between 15 to 20-foot breaks. We rolled it, and it came right back up. And the only thing that saved me is I was holding onto the antenna. I had life preserver and all that. the coxswain, who's the guy that controls the helm. He's usually a petty officer, a boatswain's mate. He has to have a coxswain pinned that can do that. And the mechanic, there's only three people at that time on the boat. And, you know, you're shooting the boats that's sinking or is heading towards the rock. You take a 22 with a little, like, a propel arrow. You hook the line up and you shoot the line to them. And trying to hold that on the deck while the boat's doing this, or you're rolling, it's not easy. So, of course, adrenaline is pumping. And it happens so quick, you don't realize what happens until you realize you're going into the water. You better grab onto something. And the antenna had broken off. And all I knew is I grabbed it. And when the boat came back up, I was holding onto it. And that's when one of the mechanic who grabbed me and just pulled me right back up. Technically, in theory, you're supposed to be strapped in and all that when this stuff is going on, but you got to do certain things. You can't be, you have a lifeline that's hooked on and, you know, things like that onto the boats, but you couldn't move around as easy or as fast if you were relying on that stuff all the time. There's boot camp training and there's real reality when you show up, you know, they pretty much tell you, okay, you know what you learned in boot camp, forget about it, because you're going to learn what really goes on out here. And that's what happens after boot camp, and you start doing things that really work, you know, that versus what in theory they try to teach you in boot camp. Not that boot camp's not a good thing. Boot camp mostly is to get you in physical training shape. It really is all about that, and understanding who's the chain of command, who do you salute to, who you don't salute to, how you take orders, and then you go to schools later. Because I was a good swimmer, they would ask me to be at that time they called it a jumper. Today they call it a rescue swimmer. And of course, now they have a school, and that school came after I had gotten out in 83. Well, there was a few reasons why I got out. And believe me, my master chief begged me to stay in. Begged me to stay in. And they were going to give me like one or two ranks automatically if I had re-signed. I would have been like E6 just within 6 months after I re-signed. But I played in a band, and I played music. I had met somebody who was pretty well known. He was asking me to come and join his band and travel. And I said, okay, I'll do that. It was okay for a while, and then that fell around 89. You know, that bust that we had during the economy. Everything just went boom. And now I'm like, basically, I was living on the streets. I was couch jumping. Once in a while, I have to go stay at a homeless shelter or room to room, couch to couch. Sometimes in a Salvation Army box, whatever I could, tents, you know, in the summertime and things like that. And of course, it was cold in the winter. I have to find a place to stay. It was tough. I think I was a survivor because of who I am as a veteran and who I am as a person. I had to go to soup kitchens. I used to go to Salvation Army, either get clothes or food 3 times a week. It was what am I doing here? How did I get here? You know, is this a shameful thing? But then when I got there, I was bumping into people just like me. And it's a very humbling experience. You know, I pick up maybe a job here and there, you know, just to make a few extra bucks. But, you know, I ended up getting money through the Vietnam Veterans Association. And they're the ones that got me into a program. And that program had to entail for me to do certain things in order for me to get money. The things would happen to me that I never knew existed. I just didn't recognize it as post-traumatic stress, because people didn't start talking about that till actually later, after the Gulf War. You just don't want to do anything. You you want to sleep a lot. You can even have suicidal thoughts, and you don't know why. It just doesn't come out. You just know there's something wrong. You're not happy. You're angry. You're fearful. You're all of those things would happen to somebody who was in. And again, I didn't drink. I didn't do any drugs. I had stopped that, years before that. It's hard to describe unless you know what it feels like. Anger, fear, you know, you quick-tempered, just like that. Somebody said, you know, it wasn't the big things that bother you, but you break your pencil by accident and you lose it, you know, and I didn't know why, you know, and that was one reason why, too. I would have issues working with people because I'd get really short-tempered and lose my patience with people, or people would lose it with me. And what I had to learn is I had to get busy. I had to do something, you know, I had to get be a part of something. So I started going to Vietnam veterans and being a part of a support group with other guys that were going through the same things that I was going through, and their experiences from Vietnam, and no different than what I experienced during my time. And everybody thinks because I wasn't a Vietnam War veteran that I couldn't go through this. And that's not true. So I had to find out what the underlying causes and conditions were. I had to understand what was going on. I don't expect people to give me anything. And I learned that being homeless, because that's what happens when you're homeless. It's such an easy rut to get into, expecting people to give you, and you can take. But if you're not giving nothing back, you're not doing yourself any good. And I learned that this is not healthy. It's not a healthy thing. And I had to change my attitude. I'd rather help people than expecting people to help me all the time. You know, and again, I'm very fortunate. I have a pretty good life. I'm married to a wonderful woman. She's certainly given me more than anybody in my life has ever given me. I'm a veteran because I was proud to serve, and it was an honor, and I love my country. But the thing is we do live in the world's greatest country. I've been to different parts of the world, and I'll tell you right now, people are rocking and rolling, flip-flopping and flying, trying to get in a pair of American Levi blues jeans, you know, and don't take granted for what we have. Don't take granted, even if you're on the streets and you're a homeless veteran, don't take for granted what you even have there, because there are people in other countries have worse than you have.
Dennis gives us hope that, if we keep at it, we can end veteran homelessness and ensure that, at a minimum, every veteran who wants one has a roof over their head. For more veteran stories, visit vetflix.org. Subscribe, rate, and review at iTunes. And thanks.